I wish I could be telling you today that a hostage deal has been agreed upon and we are waiting on tenterhooks for the first release. This, it seems, is all we live for these days in Israel. As Yaakov Katz says in our discussion today, the war is over for now, and we all know that. What keeps it alive is the need for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to ensure that the government he leads does not fall. Because his far-right coalition partners have made it clear that their priority is to invade Rafah. And they say it repeatedly. They say that if this does not happen, they will bring down the government. And many Israelis, myself included, are saying, please, please do it already. But back to reality. Hamas has got Bibi over a barrel. They are insisting as a term of any hostage release that there is a cessation of hostilities. We think for a year, but nothing is clear. Maybe more, maybe less, maybe not a cessation. And Prime Minister Netanyahu says, no way. We will get our hostages and do a Rafah military operation. Thing is, Prime Minister Netanyahu has no leverage. Yaakov and I discuss this fact and more. You have to understand that the vast majority of Israelis want and need this agony to end. Bring our hostages home, preferably alive, but in whatever condition they exist. Let us have elections and a state inquiry now. We must begin to understand and heal as a nation, as much as possible and as quickly as possible, because we are now stuck, and we have been stuck since October 7th. I'm Vivian Berkovich, former Canadian ambassador to Israel, and now living in the very beautiful and determined state of Tel Aviv. Stay with us.
Good morning, Yaakov.
Good morning, Vivian.
So great to see you. Just because you don't have visuals, listeners, Yaakov is sitting in his car holding his fancy microphone, which is very cool.
Take it wherever you need to go.
Exactly. Nothing stops us. We don't have a ton of time today, but we will never skip unless there's force majeure or something. Not even if there's a rain at 10. We skip a Sunday with Yaakov, right? We're on the next morning. We have dramatic evening. I want to jump right into things. We're basically at this crossroads, the same one we've been at now for about 3 months, which is Rafah or hostages.
Yeah.
But there were some really dramatic twists and turns last night. So why don't you just jump into it?
I want to jump into it, but I also want to, so I'm in my car because
yes,
I have to drive my 13-year-old daughter to an appointment, and I'm waiting for her as she's in the appointment to finish. And I'm telling you this because on the way here, we were listening to the radio and the news goes on, and the news is about, it starts like this. Is Hamas going to give its answer? That's one. Two, Elio Liebman, who was from Kiryat Arba, who was killed on October 7th. They thought he was kidnapped. They found his body was in someone else's grave, and they exhumed him, and now he's going to have his funeral today. Three is the Special Forces soldier who was in that operation over the weekend in the West Bank is still in critical condition. Four is, even with that, the terrorist attacks, the Shabak is saying, have gone down in the West Bank as opposed to going up in the over the last month. And then five was what's obviously going to be at the cabinet meeting and things like that. And I'm like, what? Looking at my 13-year-old daughter. And I'm saying, this is just the news driving in the morning. It just gets, and Yom HaShoah, I'm sorry. And of course, Yom HaShoah, they have to talk about that. And it's like, where is there something positive in the world today? It's not a simple reality, I think. It's just something to keep in mind. So with that as the backdrop.
Okay, I'm just sitting here. Totally gobsmacked that you remembered everything in quick succession. Well done. Yeah,
thank you. No, but it stuck with me. I don't know. You know, I don't listen all the time to the news. I'm not all the time with my 13-year-old in the car listening to the news. And it was just like, I was looking at her and I'm listening to the news at the same time. I'm saying, this is not normal, this reality.
Right.
But it's the reality we have. Anyhow, the dilemma that Israel's facing right now is one that I think is possibly the most complicated for Israel since the beginning of the war. if I have to go back in time, maybe it was, do we go into Gaza? How do we go into Gaza exactly? Although there it was pretty obvious we have to go into Gaza on the ground after the October 7th massacre. But really now we're at this moment that the government needs to decide what's happening. Are we going to get back as many hostages as possible? Or are we going to do everything possible to scuttle that deal? And sadly, that's what seems to be happening. When you spoke about the dramatic night last night, on Shabbat itself, and I just want our listeners to understand something, the prime minister, even in times of war, does not put out statements on Shabbat. It's just not done, unless there's some crazy emergency that is beyond everyone's control. But there were two statements that they called a diplomatic source in the prime minister's office. Yeah, I wonder who that is, who had to put out on Shabbat afternoon in quick succession, one after the other, basically saying, A, Hamas doesn't want the deal, and B, even if there is a deal, we're still going into Rafah no matter what. And it's hard to not see all that happening and look at it as somebody in the prime minister's office doesn't really want a deal. And maybe the reason they don't want the deal is because they understand that a deal is going to kill their government. And they are more concerned with killing their government than killing the hostages. And that creates this drama.
It's happened a few times during this war. But yeah. Okay, so bottom line is, I'll decode that really interesting story you just told us, the second one in 5 minutes, which is that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is likely the source for the media, called in his choice reporters, letting them know that the hostage deal can happen. We're not saying hands off Rafia. That's just not something that Israel's right. going to accede to. And so we had, of course, last night's very large and I wouldn't say violent, but very expressive demonstrations on the streets of Tel Aviv. I don't know what was happening in Jerusalem, because everyone has figured out the ruse with Bibi. I think people had his number all along, but now he's been forced out into the open with this. And we also have on the other side, Hamas clearly under pressure from Qatar.
And the Americans, of course.
Yes, the Americans and the Qataris to get the hostages out, and clearly trying to put a lot of pressure on Sinwar. That's the only reason that there's even any possibility of a deal happening. Today is probably, today, tomorrow, the big days where we're going to get a kind of thumbs up or thumbs down from Hamas. And that the whole world is sitting here waiting for Hamas is another absurdity you can add to
the list. Oh, no, it's Vivian, the blood should boil when we think about right? this reality, that we, the all-powerful state of Israel, with a military that can cause destruction across the globe in ways that are unimaginable, if we decided to, and we are waiting for this one, and I'm going to spare our listeners the curse words that are coming to mind, but this one piece of shit, and that's like the mild term, to tell us from his hole in Gaza whether he accepts the deal or doesn't accept the deal, and holding the fate of 131 hostages, yeah. right? And how many are we going to get in this deal? We don't even fully yet know, is so absurd and ridiculous, and just really puts into question, what have we achieved in the last 7 months? Because, yeah, I've no doubt we've weakened Hamas. We've destroyed a lot of their capabilities. We've devastated large portions of the Gaza Strip. But what have we achieved if we, this powerful country, are still being, dictated to by this pathetic terrorist? Are we strong or are we weak? And I don't know the answer to that question. It's a tough one.
We have a bit of a paradox of power, don't we? But I would include the U.S. in that question as well, because they're an important part of the equation. And
for sure.
If the United States of America cannot somehow negotiate, manage to extricate the hostages from Hamas, doesn't bode well for them either when their people are taken. And in fact, their people are taken. Some mm-hmm. of the people being held by Sinwar are American.
That's why, by the way, in the last two proofs of life,
yeah.
that Hamas has issued. One was of Hirsch Goldberg Polin, and the other video included Keith Siegel. Two out of the three hostages are U.S. citizens, right? They want to, Hamas, really, when you think about it, not only did we underestimate the military capabilities of Hamas, which were displayed on October 7th, and I have to say also throughout the last 7 months, because of their ability to survive and continue to exist in Gaza, there's, just so our listeners understand, the military talks about 15,000 armed men still in Rafiah. But also we've underestimated their ability to play the West in a very sophisticated manner. These are not These aren't two-bit terrorists who just grab a Kalashnikov and shoot up a bus stop. These guys are very smart. And you mentioned this, I think, in one of our recent episodes of how they've upped their game in terms of production when it comes to the proofs of life, right? They're smart. They get us. They maybe get us sometimes better than we get ourselves.
I think they get the West better. And I think if I could just zoom out to the broader picture, because we're dealing with our problems in Israel on the ground. But I think there's no question that what's going on in roiling campuses all over North America superseded what were the riots in cities in Europe a while ago. All of a sudden, there's much less of that, right? And the campuses in America spontaneously combust. If you don't see an organizing hand in this yet, then you're just paying attention at all, because these things don't just happen. But now it has moved to the U.S. in a big way. And I think that Americans are seeing that this is about a lot more than just Israel. They're seeing that even though they're chanting about genocide and from the river to the sea, they're also chanting about many other things and expressing very extreme demands. And I think and hope that it's becoming clearer by the minute to Americans that this movement, a million tentacles and offshoot groups, that this movement is really about hatred of the West as much as anything.
I hope they get that. I'm afraid they don't. And as concerned as I am, and I said this from the beginning of the Columbia protests and all these other protests, is as concerning as they are for us here in Israel, because people who do go to Ivy League schools tend to find themselves in places of leadership, whether it's Congress, State Department, Pentagon, financial markets, et cetera, so that down the road, it could impact Israeli support for Israel. But this is an American problem, right? They have a jihadi terrorist group growing within their colleges, and they're teaching for the hatred of America, some of their professors. Like, they got huge problems that they're going to have to deal with, not to mention the fact that if I'm Joe Biden, I'm looking at these protests and I'm saying these useful idiot, progressive idiots are helping my rival, Donald Trump, pave his way back to the White House.
Like, unbelievable.
Yeah. People are stupid, but that's nothing new.
But you think it's not clear. It's not clear to you that the broader American public is understanding that there's a bigger picture problem here, that it's not just about Israel and the alleged genocide.
I think they are. And I think you watched the video yesterday at the University of Michigan, the graduation, and you have this huge walkout in the middle of, it looked to me like probably at least 100 people waving Palestinian flags and people, students who are graduating. All right. So I was thinking to myself, like, you're a parent of a student that you come from, I don't know, the middle of America, Oklahoma. You got no skin in the game. You're not Jewish. You don't really, you've heard of Israel. It doesn't mean much to you. Like, you look at these people, what do you think? How does it make you feel? And by the way, you look at the polls, and there was the recent Harvard-Harris poll, and the Pew and the Gallup polls have shown a decline in support. But the recent Harvard poll actually showed that the vast majority of Americans, up to almost 80%, continue to support Israel's war against Hamas, which is obviously extremely significant. Whether those numbers are accurate is a separate question. So I don't think we have a big problem with most Americans, but we have a problem with the American elite. And that's something that I wonder what most Americans think about that and whether they're really ready to grapple with the issues that they're facing, because that requires a huge cultural shift in America, which I don't know if they're capable of doing right now.
So just to challenge that quickly, the American elites, we have seen numbers of 40% of the so-called activists or protesters on various campuses are not students. They are not studying at the institution. Another school was higher, it was 50%. These are not the elites. These are professional organizers and agitators and provocateurs coming onto campuses. And we know from history that when we see the, quote, elites leading the way or revolting, it spreads. They're people of power. They have power. You just said yourself, they're people. Yeah, this crowd, this cohort is going to move up into leadership positions across society. The cat may already be out of the bag a little on that, no?
It might be. There was a story that I saw it over a few times over the last few weeks, but it was in Yedioth Ahronot, one of the widely circulated Hebrew newspapers, right, over the weekend, just about the amount of money that has been donated to colleges and universities across the U.S. And obviously at the top, you see the Qataris, you see the Chinese, you see the Saudis, a lot of countries that are not exactly, I would say, the freest and the most democratic and the ones that share the liberal values of what Western democracies are supposed to share. And then, of course, they get into the Jewish money, you know, Robert Kraft, Mark Rowan, Geffen, and all these other guys. And I'm that's the counterweight, but it's not really the counterweight because a lot of the Jewish money is not, it's not given to create a pro-Israel culture or a pro-Israel narrative. The Qatari money, the Saudi money is given to create a non or an anti-Israel and maybe anti-West narrative. So these people are giving money, $100 million to Penn. Are they saying, I want to set up a chair that's going to teach Israel studies and it's going to be like a right-wing pro-Israel Zionist? No, that's not what they're doing. They're giving it to the chair of finance or the chair of arts or something like that. I happen to meet October 7th, as we all know, really brought, kindled for a lot of people or ignited for a lot of Jewish Americans, this feeling of connection with the state of Israel. Great. And a lot of people, very wealthy, came to Israel and started to look at where they could give money. I happened to meet one of them. For discretion, I won't mention the name, but a real big billionaire. And I was asked to meet the person for a meal, for dinner. We met and I said to them, what have you supported in Israel? This man, you know, middle-aged, older, they've never really given anything to the state of Israel. They've given billions across the U.S. to arts and culture. Nothing, very Jewish people, but like nothing. And that's great. I'm not, who am I to judge where people give their money? But like that, you can't look at that and say, oh, it's a counterweight to the Qataris. It's not. It's got nothing to do with Israel. So we got to also understand that it's not, Jewish money is not the opposite of Saudi Qatari money. Now, we've lost the college campuses, and that's, I'm just reinforcing what you were saying.
Yeah, we've lost the college campuses, frankly, in broad daylight. The other thing that I did a two-part interview with Shai Davidi, the prophet of Columbia, yeah, who's been making lots of noise.
A hero, I think, for the Jewish people.
Unbelievable guy. Yeah. And I actually happened to interview him before he became this global icon. So I had 90 minutes of tape, so I split it into two because it was so interesting. If you haven't listened to it yet, listeners, you should. And he made an interesting observation. I haven't researched it, but I'll buy it. He said the Jewish donors, just as you're saying, they tend to just give the money. And usually what's more important to them is to have their name on a building.
Yeah.
You don't see the Qatari names or the Chinese names on the buildings.
All the buildings have Jewish names. It's true, right?
Isn't that amazing?
All the buildings, yeah.
He said, so, you know, and I know that they've been endowing chairs, the Saudis, Qataris. I'm not as familiar with what Chinese have been doing. But it started in the 80s with the Saudis, and I remember people talking about it then. And it's just become more and more organized, intense, and the Qataris now outbid the Saudis in terms of donations. And they're not just throwing their money away. They're doing it for a reason. But they're the bedfellow of America. So there you go.
And look,
that
by the way,
crazy circle is now complete.
And look at what's been happening in Israel, right? Al Jazeera is a terrorist abetting TV station that has been outlawed in periods of time in Egypt, in Saudi, in other places. And Israel, while Al Jazeera is basically the mouthpiece for Hamas, Israel still allows it to broadcast freely. Why? Because it is owned by the Al Thani royal family of Qatar. And the Israeli, even though laws have been passed, authority exists, the prime minister is not willing to take the decision to do it because we need the Qataris. Like, this is how they operate also. So smart and so shrewd is that they're able to make you dependent on them that you can never take steps against them. Again, it goes back to what we started with, Vivian. They know us better than we know ourselves. They are outthinking us five steps ahead.
On that note, I'm going to have to do this to you and ask you to pull out your prophet hat. And you're going to try to divine what might happen with the hostages.
It's not a fair question.
I know it's.
It's not a fair question because even we spoke about how we're all waiting for Sinwar. We're waiting to find out what Hamas's answer is going to be to all of this. I want to hope. I can tell you what I hope. I want to hope that there's going to be a deal. I think that is that's it. The war, let's be honest for a moment, and I know this is painful to say and to hear, but the war's over. It's time now to wrap things up, to get back the hostages, and for Israel to move on. We don't need this war anymore, and it's time for the country to be able to go into a healing process. Not to mention the fact that you have the summer around the corner, you have the school year starting in September, you need people to be able to go back home and start the school year, and for people's lives to be able to go back to the way they're supposed to be. It seems that the government, though, does not see eye to eye with that. Rafah, I totally think we need to do something there, but I think that can wait. I don't think it has to be done now. I think we all know that the hostages have no time. Every day that passes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And is I want the potential just, for another hostage to his or her life to be lost. We can't afford that anymore.
Never mind their mental condition, because nobody is going to come out of there in good shape. They just can't after all this time. I just want to, in closing, fill the reader in on a little sidebar Yaakov and I had last night. He writes a fantastic column every Friday, and you wrote about the kind of exactly what we've been talking about, kind of the Rafah or the hostages.
The dilemma. And
this is before the Saturday leaked statements from a senior government source that was most likely Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. So Yaakov writes this great call. You write this great column and you say, you know, on the one hand, on the other hand, and you're building, you're taking me to what I think is this great crescendo. And you just...
I let you down.
You let me down. So I wrote to Yaakov, listeners, and I said, it's a great column, but he just left me hanging. He said, what did you want from me? And I said, I wanted brilliance. I wanted closure.
I wanted answers. We all want the answer. And I said, I want the answer too. Right. That's
We all turn to everyone we see during the day. So what's going to happen? As if someone else knows better than we do. Right. So you're mortal after all, but trying hard, and really appreciate your insights, Yaakov. And let's hope. Let's hope, please. It's a good week.
Yes.
Let's hope it's a good day. And we'll revisit it all next week and maybe standing in the same spot.
Yes.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
In closing, thanks for listening. Today's podcast is a touch shorter than usual, but that is because I'm rushing off to the South to meet a group of Canadian journalists I'm hosting under the auspices of a Canadian-based NGO I founded with a Toronto-based partner. I've got a crazy day ahead, and you'll be hearing more about it. We're off to the Nova Festival site, kibbutz near Oz, and more. So I'm very pressed for time, and I apologize for that. For the next while, we will be publishing more content than usual, because we have it, because so much is going on, and among our written pieces will be a request that those of you who have not yet become paying subscribers, please consider doing so. We will be paywalling content as of May 17th, our 2-year launch anniversary. Producing quality content requires deep commitment and time, and we require resources to do it. Thanks to those who have already made the decision to support State of Tel Aviv with a paid subscription, and I look forward to welcoming more of you to the fold. We will also be starting special subscriber-only programming very soon. More on that later. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and have a great week. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the State of Tel Aviv and Beyond podcast. We'll keep the dispatches coming as frequently as we can. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment, rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. You can check out our full library of articles and podcasts at our website, stateoftelaviv.com. State of Tel Aviv is an independent media venture, and we rely on subscribers to support our work. If you are not yet a paying subscriber, please consider taking the plunge today. Each person really does make a huge difference, especially in these very challenging times in Israel. It is important that you stay informed and current and seek out a range of perspectives. This is a pivotal moment in Israeli history. It is not a time to be passive and disengaged. Thanks for sticking with me to the end. I'm Vivian Berkovich, signing off from deep inside the State of Tel Aviv.